You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, as listeners know, I am very interested in foreign affairs. I'm interested in defence and actually intelligence issues. And so I'm bringing on a rather special guest to talk into the area of cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, and how that relates into not only New Zealand, but the global world. So I'm very pleased to introduce to you Anthony Grasso. He's the Chief Information Security Officer, or CISO, of Cogent Limited. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. Thank you.
You have an incredible background amongst many things that you've actually worked for the intelligence services in the United Kingdom and here in New Zealand.
Yes, I have. Yeah, really great to do my civic duty in such a detailed way. Yeah,
I'll make you relax right from the start to say I won't be asking any questions about that. I've dealt enough with excellent people in the intelligence space not to ask those questions. But you and I are going to be at a conference in a few weeks' time as part of the Asia-Pacific Security Forum, talking obviously, well, about security. So you specialize in cybersecurity. You specialize in AI. So, I mean, it's a simple layman's question to start, but, you know, how challenging is cybersecurity at the moment, particularly for New Zealand? Is it something to the side that people should be worried about, or is it front and centre?
I would say it's front and centre. And the reason being is, so as you can hear, I'm from the UK originally, so I'm from a very different threatscape to New Zealand. And there are things that I do here in New Zealand, so I've been here for 20 years, by the way, there are things here I do in New Zealand that I'd never do in the UK because the threatscape is different. So, for example, I remember I was coming home one night. I think I'd been in the country for about 5 years. I had my headphones in. I was walking past the park. It was in the middle of winter, and I didn't think twice about it. But I actually stopped and checked myself, and I thought, wow, I would never do this in the UK because your threat level is different. Why this is important is because New Zealand as a whole is geographically separate from the rest of the world, and it has had a very limited exposure to war, to terrorism, to the kinds of things that the rest of Europe, for example, has on a daily basis. I grew up during the Irish Troubles, as they're known, and we had mainland bombings. I was around when there was a few of those bomb threats went out. I was in buildings where they were in, for example. So it's a very different threat level. Why this is relevant is because that physical threat allows New Zealand to kind of sit back and not worry too much, which is fine. It's part of the reason I'm here. But once we connected ourselves to the internet, that is no longer true. And the problem is we have to actually understand that that's no longer, we're now in with everybody else, right? We are part of this global network. An attack that happens over in France can happen here in terms of a cyber attack. Right. It also means all the geopolitical things that you see around the world, as you hear about how they're attacking, I don't know, water treatment plants or nuclear plants, that can happen here as well. And we have to be very conscious of that. And so what does that mean for us? So critical national infrastructure, big deal. So for our government, I know it's something that they worry about. You know, we have a dedicated government department to look at these things, of course. But businesses is what runs New Zealand. Right. And the problem that we face is that the wonderful thing about New Zealand that really appeals to my Maltese genetics is that we're small, nimble, and we create businesses, and we sometimes make massive impacts around the world with stuff that we generate, not just in our wine and other produce, but the little things that we come up with. That is just so great. That is now under attack from the threat is there. The cyber threat is very real, and we see it. In Cogent, I've personally worked on about 8 or 9 different attacks in the last 3 months. Right.
I think it's good for people to hear that, not for a fear base, but actually to understand that, we are connected and we are a target. Because you did, right. My impression over time is a lot of New Zealanders, bless us, we sort of feel that at the bottom of the world, no one really is worried about us. Why would we be our target? But we are, and I assume, Anthony, particularly in the commercial space, if we keep into that area, this will be a mixture of state and non-state actors, or is it like, I mean, I'm not wanting to get too specific, specific, of course, but you know, who are the groups, if you will, in the broader sense, targeting New Zealand, particularly into our corporate area?
So this is a great question, and I'm going to give you what I think, not what I know, right? Because I'm not referencing anything I might have known or know, but what I think. So here's the thing: like, New Zealand's of interest to cyber criminals because we can make easy money. They can make easy money. So, for example, I work with a conveyancing law firm. They transact $650 million a year, right? Now, I was there when they were fished, and the cyber criminal managed to get about 100 grand out of this company. This is a great payday. I worked really hard to earn like 100 grand. They've done it in literally hours, right? By hoodwinking a system, making or getting into a system and making use of it. So when we talk commercially, and I'm a technical guy, but I understand the term return on investment, and I have to put an awful lot of consulting hours in to get the same outcome. And I work really hard and write reports, etc. And someone's just sat at the other end of the world and managed to write a few emails, change a few numbers, and has netted 100,000.
Sounds like a good career. No, any kidding. Sorry.
Well, the great thing is that, well, this is what I love about the law, is they can't catch everybody, but when they do, they make examples of them, right? And frankly, I would not want to sit in any jail anywhere around the world having been, you know, caught as a cyber criminal. And also, the other great thing is that, you know, the countries that we're aligned with, the European countries that we're aligned with, they take this stuff real, real seriously. And if one of these cyber criminals happen to go on holiday and they know who they are, they pick them up. So now you're kind of restricted to holidaying at home with your money. So it's highly restricted, but it's good payday, right?
Yeah, that's right. Take the money, can't use it.
Yeah, pretty well, kind of, but they can live a really good life, I suppose. But they have to be very careful about revealing themselves. And we have lots of small businesses here. I spoke on Radio New Zealand a few weeks ago about the hearing clinic down south. It's like a small franchise business that, you know, is just making money, serving the community, you know, something that really should be protected and looked after, right? Because they're serving the community and it's a small run business. They don't necessarily have the wherewithal about cybersecurity. And they got ransomware and knocked off the face of the planet pretty much, right? Their business is pretty much gone. And it's the thing about the kind of attacks we have, and most of them are automated. So let's relate that to something that we can all grasp. It's not that long ago, you would pick up the phone would ring, you pick up the phone, hello, nothing for ages, suddenly it would click in and then someone would try to scam you, right? Same thing here, is that they scan the internet looking for a particular vulnerability, and when they find it, they try to get in. So this is what they do with all the lists and lists of, you hear about breaches of information. This is what they do with that information, is they use it to try to you put them into this automated machine to try and find a vulnerability that they can get into, right? So there is good payday. Intelligence-wise, if I was a foreign intelligence agency, New Zealand would be awesome, because I know that they're linked into all to the other bigger countries. And therefore, they are bound to have information that maybe I have a better chance of accessing than if I try to go to some of the bigger countries who have got more money, more GDP, and more skill sets potentially to prevent my attack.
You're nailing something which certainly exercised my mind when I chaired our Foreign Affairs and Defence Committee. It was exactly that, particularly in the Five Eyes space, that we are the smaller of the five partners, we are more vulnerable. And yeah, if you're an overseas state actor, we're the ones to focus in on, because more likely to have a flaw in the system. And once you're in the New Zealand system, you're getting connection through. So, I mean, we've got that corporate side. We know New Zealand's parliament was targeted. I've been targeted. We've got state actors as well. And one that often gets mentioned is Russia and Iran. I mean, I know there's China as well, but I'm always talking about China. I mean, to the extent you can or want to, why is it the likes of a Russia and Iran spend so much time in the cybersecurity space, or is everyone doing it?
So a difficult question to answer, so I will dance around it a little bit. But thanks, Simon. But you know, I'll use you as an example in terms of being a politician, right? In terms of being a politician, there are lots of aspects that I don't know what it's particular, but there are lots of aspects about getting intelligence, knowing what the other party is thinking when you're trying to put a bill through, and when you gather more information, you're turning up for any event, being informed of what the other person's hands look like is very helpful, right? And so we know, for example, one of the biggest things, of course, is misinformation. So this is an easy one, because right? And so we know that there are bots around the world that shape people's view, right? That is so important, because the other thing that we seem to have lost, so I hear, is about our ability to critically think. So you put the two things together, and you add misinformation and the inability to critically think, you can have a real effect on a big group of people that can shape a nation, even if it's short-term. Now, if you take a look at the recent riots in the UK, the misinformation about the tragic deaths of those three young girls at the dance centre, misinformation came out was these were illegal immigrants that... it was an illegal immigrant that killed these three girls, which was not true. Yeah. However, the misinformation that came out and was perpetuated. And the other thing is everybody wants, and this is the thing that bugs me the most, and it happens in my technical field all the time, is that people just want to echo something so they sound intelligent because they're too lazy to figure it out themselves. So they repeat what they've already heard and hope it's true.
And they also want to be at the forefront, has been my experience. People like to say, hey, look, I'm the first to tell my friends. And so... Yeah, you've certainly seen wrong information being perpetrated or spread extremely, extremely fast. I suppose, too, Anthony, the other side of it, obviously we've got these state actors and non-state actors, but the consequence of cybersecurity, obviously on the persons you've illustrated that hearing clinic, but and I know this was not a, and I've got the wrong language, it wasn't a hack or whatever. We remember CrowdStrike's failure a few months back and just how one event crippled us. I mean, I suppose I'm trying to get to the severity of a cyber attack, if this was really done deliberately, is devastating too strong a word?
No, I think it's right. It's really interesting. So you talked about a vendor disaster, which was a patch update that went wrong, right? Because there's some poor faceless tech guy who was asked to put a patch out, right, on a Friday night, and he didn't want to, but he was made to by his boss, and now he's carrying a can, or he or she is carrying a can for it, probably. And also, as you say, in terms and the cyber attacks that we face as a country. So let me just, the CrowdStrike thing, really important, because this is something that is absolutely, I think, killing New Zealand. You ask any one of the service providers here in New Zealand, they are all cybersecurity experts, everybody, right? And that lack of the lack of training that I see means that people above them are making decisions based on bad information. I can't think of any system that does well when if you're given bum information that you're making a good decision at all. In your previous job, I saw the number of jobs that you held, and I'm fairly certain that you needed people around you who really understood the detail and could advise you, but you ultimately make the call, right?
Yep. Oh, 100%. In fact, I used to often say, without going too much off on a tangent of politics, is, you know, my decision as a member of parliament was to make decisions that often others people couldn't or wouldn't. In other words, lots of people in New Zealand will have opinions on things, and that's great, but someone's got to make the decision. But yeah, I wasn't an expert on all and every topic, and I don't think any MP is, and it sounds like a similar analogy within the cyberspace.
Well, correct, but so what we have are all these technical people in all these jobs, they're not necessarily particularly technical. So they hope that the people advising them around them are. And it was such a gap for us that actually, and I'll give a plug to Victoria University, is I created the cybersecurity degree. It was the first of its kind in New Zealand because I saw that we had this gap. is what I wanted to do is produce a bunch of cybersecurity professionals that are well qualified, so that we actually do fill that gap of cybersecurity, because everybody's product focused, and they will take the latest product from overseas because it's built in Germany, so it must be really good, and implement it without really understanding the technical detail of what they're implementing often. So CrowdStrike, to answer that question, is that everybody seems to have forgotten the purpose of having a heterogeneous network, which means a variety of hardware and software, right? So the degree that I did was real-time system, IoT nowadays. One of the things we talked about was a space shuttle. They gave out the plans, the requirements to two different companies. One company wrote the main system, the other company wrote the backup system. The point being is, if there's a mistake in one, it is unlikely to be in the other, right? So you have different hardware. So if you can't just buy CrowdStrike, you have to buy CrowdStrike and, I don't know, Fortinet. So if there's a failure in one, you keep going in the other, if what you're doing is critical. Mm-hmm. If it happens to be you can't get your cigarettes from down the dairy, that's tough. That's not important, right? But if it's like, because our travel grounds will halt.
Yeah. Well, right? I mean, it's more of a defense analogy, but, you know, our probably bad timing after the sinking of the Manawa Nui, but, you know, warships are meant to have redundancies, so that if one thing goes wrong, there's something to kick in to protect it. And as you're saying, cybersecurity is no different. So talk to us then about AI, because artificial intelligence is a big topic at the moment.
Yes.
Give us a quick couple of minutes on it. Talk us about your perspective on AI, and certainly, you know, any impacts you see this is going to have in the cybersecurity space.
Well, first of all, what I'd like to do is try and define what AI is, as I understand it, because I think that's really important. So I'm just going to read you something that I put together. So to me, AI is the science of making computers and machines intelligent, enabling them to learn, reason, and make decisions like a human. Right? Frankly, from what I can see about everything that's got AI labeled on it, it's more of a marketing label than it is real life. Because what I'd be expecting, for example, for an AI, is I have an AI washing machine, and it learns, and then it starts taking on the cooking and the cleaning, and actually takes over the house. As it learns about these various tasks, it learns. I don't have to program it. It learns what it needs to do. You know, it will have other sources where it learns from. And that, to me, is truly about it learning about its environment and reasoning. Right? So another good example was I was writing a LinkedIn post about a friend of mine, and I asked to create, so I didn't want to break any copyrights, so I asked it to create a picture for me for LinkedIn. And I said, here's the criteria. And it came up with this lovely picture of a boat on a rough sea. And I immediately thought, wow, that looks like a combination of Constable Turner and Salvador Dali, right?
Oh.
Right? Nothing new here. It was just like a mash of other things that it's seen. Mm. I don't consider that it learning or reasoning or making decisions. It was just taking something and creating something based on a set of rules, which is what computing is.
And can I actually say thank you for using that analogy? Again, I'm very much a layman in this space, but as sure. I use, you know, AI, being on Microsoft's products or Google, it is just collating, for me, very swiftly information. There is often nothing new. It's a great tool. I've also used it to generate images. But as you say, it really is a combination. There isn't newness involved. So would you then see real AI as being that learning? It is actually able to generate its own, I was going to say knowledge, probably better to say its own information?
Well, yeah, be able to make decisions based on its context, you know? So again, we see, like, you want to take the military angle. If we look at, like, military robots, they're very clever. I'm not saying they're not clever, but I'm trying. So my background, remember, is in real-time systems. Real-time systems is about, I have sensors and I make decisions based on what my sensors are telling me, like on planes, on what I do. So I can navigate mazes, jump over logs, that sort of thing. an AI system would go, okay, I'm not going to use my gun in this example because I can see they're embedded. In fact, I'm going to flank round, I'm going to throw a grenade. And its reason based on what it knows of the environment to make alternative choices, I guess. And even then you could do most of that with sensors, I would say. So I think AI is great for investors. I think it generates an awful lot of money around the world. I'm yet to sort of really be convinced. Like, for example, I was on a forum that talked about the financial transactions. I thought this is very interesting for procurement. So the way that procurement works in a sentence is that you and I negotiate a price, right? And you, there's you and there's a bunch of other people. We're trying to negotiate prices, then we get that price and then we trade. It's a very lengthy human problem. And they've now started to put AI in to help do that trading. But to me, this is the difference between the hand crank washing machines that you used to have, tumble machines, and the electronic. I mean, you just sped it up. But it's basically the same process. And my washing machine makes certain decisions about what water to put in or when to put softener in and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know if this is an overused term for me, AI, what these things are doing that make it able to reason. I will say that the language model that they use, so that I could be talking to Simon the avatar, right?
You found me out.
Yeah. Well, it could be, because they've got that quite good, that they understand speech and they can talk back and forth. And the danger there is, and I think we were talking just off camera, but we were talking about the moral issue. Mm. And a young man recently took his own life. He was with an AI and it took over his life because it was a friend he could talk to. And this thing had it's got no heart. It doesn't care. It doesn't understand. It's just getting involved and it's accessing its language model to talk about things and have context, but didn't think once that couldn't work out that this person was going down a trajectory that isn't good for mankind or for him, right?
Yeah. And so it's actually a good example.
Yeah, it's not okay. But again, it wasn't reasoning. It wasn't learning, certainly.
So then it probably is the final question then is, what would an AI system look like in cybersecurity? And I hope that's not a stupid question. As I say, I'm more of a layman in this space, but obviously AI is going to play a role in cybersecurity. But for you, if it's true AI, then what does that sort of look like?
I think it was, and I think that's a really difficult question, because right now the way they're using it is like the wash machine analogy, which is they're taking manual tasks and speeding them up, right? What they need for the AI, I think, is for it to, as we say, it needs to be able to reason and learn, right? That's what it needs to be. So giving its information, it can reason what's going on, not just do like something happens and it just cuts something off. It needs to be able to reason and learn and navigate around the network or make certain decisions that it can determine from the information it's given, right? Again, at the moment now, the way that AI is being used, really what we're doing is it's able to process a bunch of data that a human would take a long time to do. So for me, I think we're a long way off from true AI of any sort, which is kind of a good thing, because ultimately you need to have humans involved. That's absolutely for sure. I mean, I'd be very concerned any system's just left to go run off and do its own thing. You try doing that with an employee and see how long you last.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Hey, Anthony, look, thank you for sharing your knowledge. And in a relatively short time, I know enough that this is an incredibly complex and complicated space. So look, incredibly grateful for your time and very much looking forward to joining you at the Asia Pacific Security Forum in a few weeks.
Great. See you there, Simon.
So that was Anthony Grasso. He's the Chief Information Security Officer at Cogent Limited.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.